All right, so today we're going deep, really deep.
Deeper than usual.
Oh, yeah, way deeper. We're going into a really pivotal moment in history, the rise of the Nazi Party.
Okay, going back to the Nazis.
Yeah, but specifically in rural Schleswig-Holstein, like in the 1920s and 30s.
Interesting. Most people think of the Nazis as like an urban phenomenon.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Well, that's kind of the common perception, but that's what makes this so fascinating.
I see, yeah.
We're using this 1943 academic journal article, and it's really eye-opening. It's called The Political Movements Among the Rural People in Schleswig-Holstein, 1918 to 1932, too.
Wow, 1943. So this was written like right in the thick of things.
Pretty much. And you'd think it'd be, you know, dry as dust,
yeah.
But it's actually not. It's like a window into how the Nazis gained power, and it's got a lot of things that we can like learn from even today.
Okay, I'm intrigued. So what surprised you the most from this article?
You know, one thing that really jumped out was how conservative groups like the Landbund actually sort of they helped the Nazis rise.
They helped.
Yeah, they thought they could like use them
as allies.
Kind of, yeah. They thought the Nazis would be like useful pawns to get what they wanted.
Oh, that's interesting. So like they underestimated them.
Big time. They thought they could control them, you know, and it totally backfired.
Mm-hmm.
The article explains how the Nazis, how they kind of wormed their way into farmers' organizations that already existed, like the Bauernbund.
Hmm. So they were working from the inside.
Exactly. They used those platforms to spread their message and get influence within the very groups that thought they were calling the shots.
Wow, so they were playing the double game. It's pretty sneaky when you think about it.
Oh, yeah, total double game. They were like, okay, we'll work within the system.
But really, they were trying to destroy it.
Right. And the article, it talks about this concept called counter-revolutionary syndicalism. And I was like, what is that?
Hey, that's a mouthful.
So how would you explain that?
Well, imagine a political movement that's like, forget the rules of democracy. They don't want to play the game,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they're not interested in elections and all that.
Exactly. They want direct action.
Yeah.
They want to, like, shake things up and get results now, however they have to do it.
So, like, protests, boycotts.
Yeah, but sometimes even more extreme.
More extreme.
Yeah, the article describes how the Nazis would organize disruptive rallies, tell people not to pay their taxes. And they weren't afraid to use intimidation tactics either.
So while everyone else is playing by the rules,
they're rewriting them.
And they targeted people who were like already fed up with the system.
Yeah, people who felt like democracy was too slow, too bureaucratic. Farmers who were struggling.
Yeah, so they saw an opportunity.
It definitely. And they offered a more radical alternative, one that promised quick action and results. Even if it meant breaking the rules.
Mm. And what about the people who still believed in democracy? Were they just like standing by and watching this happen?
Some people were worried, but a lot of them, especially the conservatives and liberals, they kind of dismissed the Nazis.
They didn't take them seriously.
Nope. They thought they were just a fringe group, a nuisance that would just fade away on its own.
So they didn't see them as a real threat?
Right. And they didn't see the danger in this whole the ends justify the means thinking. They didn't see where it could lead.
And so the Nazis were able to get away with it because they were actually doing things.
Oh, yeah. They took action, which made them stand out from all the other parties who were just talking and debating. And there's this crazy story in the article about a speech that one of the Nazi leaders gave, Otto Hamkins, in 1929.
Yeah.
And he just comes right out and says, "We're here to overthrow the system. No beating around the bush."
Wow. That's pretty bold. I mean, he's not even trying to hide it.
Nope. And that's partly why they gained so much traction.
Yeah.
They were bold, they were willing to take action, and they weren't afraid to say what they really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a risk, but it worked for them. A lot of people were just, I don't know, losing faith.
In the system.
Yeah, in the whole system. Especially like if they were struggling financially, they wanted change. And the Nazis, well, they promised a totally different future.
And they were good at like tailoring their message, right?
Yeah.
To fit what people were worried about, especially in those rural areas.
Right, spot on. They knew that farmers were facing like all these different challenges, crop prices going up and down, competition from other countries bringing in their products.
And just that feeling of being ignored.
Yeah, like the city folks just didn't get it. Didn't get what they were going through.
So the Nazis basically tapped into that and pointed fingers.
Right.
Found some scapegoats.
I mean, there was that element of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more, I think, more than just blaming other people. It was about weaving this, like, narrative, you know?
Of narrative.
Yeah, a story. a story about national revival, you know, bringing Germany back to its former glory. And they tied that in with rural life, you know, hard work, tradition.
I see. So they were creating an image.
Exactly. Like a very specific identity for their followers. Like, we are the true Germans.
And they used the party structure itself to reinforce all that.
Oh, absolutely. The rallies, the marches, even youth groups. The article goes into detail about all that.
So it was all very carefully planned.
It was. It wasn't just about spreading their ideas. It was about creating a community, making people feel like they belonged,
yeah.
Like they were part of something bigger.
Yeah, like they were building a whole separate world with
yeah.
its own rules.
Right. And at the center of it all was Hitler.
Of course. So how did they make him appeal to these rural communities? Like, what was their strategy there?
Well, Hitler, he actually visited Schleswig-Holstein in 1929. And the article says he was really surprised by how much the farmers liked him.
He was surprised.
Yeah, it seems like it. And so the Nazis, they really played that up.
Yeah.
They made him out to be this strong leader, a man of the people, someone who understood their problems and could actually do something about them.
So it wasn't just about like policies or ideas, it was more personal than that.
Exactly. They were really good at connecting with people on an emotional level.
Making them believe.
Yeah. People were looking for something to believe in. They wanted a leader who could give them hope for the future.
Right, right. And fear too, right? They played on people's fears.
Oh, for sure. The Nazis knew how to use fear and anxiety. They'd talk about the economy, about how unstable it was.
The threat from outsiders.
Yeah, they'd say things like, look at all these threats, communists, Jews, foreign powers. And they'd make it seem like they were the only ones who could protect Germany.
So it was this classic us versus them tactic.
Totally. And it worked. It really worked. People were scared and they wanted someone to make them feel safe.
It's crazy how they were able to like manipulate people like that.
It is. But it reminds us that even in a democracy, even in a place that seems peaceful and stable, people can be vulnerable to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a reminder that it could happen anywhere.
Absolutely. The Nazis were able to tap into something deep, something that went beyond just economics. They were tapping into fear, into resentment, into the need for belonging.
It's, I don't know, it's kind of scary when you think about it.
It is. But understanding how they did it is really important. Because it helps us see the warning signs and maybe prevent something like that from happening again.
Yeah, it makes you think, doesn't it? Like, it can happen anywhere, at any time.
It really can. And that's why this deep dive is so important. It reminds us that democracy is fragile.
Yeah.
It's something we have to constantly protect. And we have to be able to spot those warning signs, you know, those tactics that were used before.
So, okay, big picture time. What were the main tactics the Nazis used to, you know, really get their hooks into rural Schleswig-Holstein? What really stood out in that article?
Well, it was a whole bunch of things, really. A perfect storm, you could say.
Yeah.
They knew how to play the game, you know. Yeah. They exploited all those economic anxieties people had. But they also appealed to these deeper desires that people had, you know, like that need for security, for belonging.
Yeah, they gave people something to believe in.
Exactly. And they told a good story, too. This whole narrative of national revival, it really resonated with the farmers, you know, who felt like, hey, we're being forgotten here.
Right. Like they were the real Germans.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't just focus on winning over individual voters. They went after those existing organizations, too, like the farmers' unions.
Taking them over from within.
Yep. They knew those institutions were powerful. And if they could control them, they could spread their message even further.
So it's a warning to us, right, to like protect those institutions, make sure they don't get taken over by, you know, by extreme groups.
Absolutely, because once they're in, they could really do some damage. And it's not just formal institutions either. It's social networks, too. Online communities.
Yeah, I mean, the Nazis, they were masters of that whole rally thing. Big marches, social gatherings. It all created that sense of community.
Right. They knew that people craved that sense of belonging, that shared identity. Mm. And they twisted it, you know, made it work for them.
So as we kind of like come to the end of this deep dive, I can't help but think, could this happen again? Like, are we seeing this stuff today in other political movements?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? We need to be asking ourselves that.
Mm.
Are we seeing these same tactics being used? Are they playing on our fears, on our economic anxieties? Are they trying to divide us?
And are they rejecting those like basic democratic norms? That's what really worries me.
Well, you too. And that's why it's so important to learn from the past, to see how these things happened before, so we can, you know, so we can be prepared.
Yeah, so we don't make the same mistakes.
Exactly. It's about being informed. It's about being engaged. It's about being critical of the messages we're hearing from all sides.
So as we come back up from this this deep dive, I really hope you're thinking about like how precious democracy is and how important it is to defend it.
Yeah, we can't take it for granted. We have to be vigilant. We have to call out dangerous ideologies when we see them. And we have to hold our leaders accountable.
Absolutely. We can't let history repeat itself.
And we have to remember that we're all vulnerable, you know? We all have these needs, these desires. And those can be exploited if we're not careful.
That's a powerful thought.
It is.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Keep asking those questions, everyone. And we'll see you next time.